Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
So welcome to the podcast. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate, and I can see the I Am movement is on your, is that your green screen background or what you got back there?
Yeah, that's my green screen. That's, our little dealio.
All right, so tell us who you are. I mean, my audience is made up of realtors, and then primarily my audience is people who just get kicks out of real estate. They don't even do real estate. They just love it. So tell them who you are, what you do, and all that fun stuff.
Okay, I'll give you a quick background. Is I grew up in Canada on a farm as a laborer. And then when my father got cancer in when I was in my late 20s, I needed to make money quickly. So I got into real estate. I was really bad at it to begin with because I was a farm boy, but I got some good mentorship. And then I got really, really good because I had the work ethic that I brought from being a farmer to the real estate business. In 4 years, I was selling 100 homes a year. And then I bought the company and I took it from $300 million to $1 billion of sales a year for 10 years. Helped a lot of people get really good at real estate. Sold it just before the 2008 crash. Thought I was really smart, which I kind of was, a little lucky, a little smart. But I sold it at top dollar in the crash. I had a balance of sale. The person who I sold it to wasn't able to sustain the payment. So I got it back. And then I ended up rebranding myself with Keller Williams. I have two Keller Williams now. But I also have all the other things that go with it. I invest in student housing. I have flips. I have a real estate team still. I have, storage containers. So I have a ton of friends that are in all multifamily, the whole kit and caboodle. So I usually try to find a good operator and then back them up and help scale their business a bit with resources and some capital.
Very good. So of all those different kinds of investments, what's your favorite one? You very rarely hear of anybody that does student housing. Was that because you had kids in student housing or was that an accident?
No. So I'm part of a mastermind group of people that are heavily involved in passive income vehicles. And we came across this guy who was a double physics math major, and he had a small business of about $8 million a year where he was doing student housing, but he had broke it down to a science. So he had these circles where if you went another, say, 100 meters away from the university, the rents dropped by 75 cents per square foot or whatever. He had hired every electrician and every tradesman, and he took three of them, and he sat there with a clipboard, and he said, okay, put up a sheet of gyprock, install a dishwasher. Then they'd uninstall it and you do the next person. And he broke it down to a science so that when he purchased a property, he could know that it would take 9.3 days to renovate the property. And every tradesman had a window of opportunity to come in and renovate. So what would take the average person that invested in that area 3 months to renovate the place, he would do it in, say, 2.5 weeks, saving time, saving money. And so when we found him, we thought, well, let's give him some resources and help scale his business from $8 million a year to $120 million a year in 4 years. And that's the type of thing that excites me.
Well, it's interesting. You think about all that math and all those details, and of course, time is money. Most people never figure that out, but there's so few people in the real estate space who can do math. It's sad and shocking at the same time. So you hear this guy, he crushes it out to a formula. It's fascinating. So in your years in real estate, you've been in a million different angles in the business. Of course, the premise of our show is to talk about the things in real estate nobody expects to ever see, find out about, or hear of. And then there it is, you're confronted with it and you have to come out the other side, which is no different than being in the heart of the coronavirus pandemic. We know there's another side to it. How you come out depends on, frankly, what you find out along the way. So I'd love to know what stories you could tell after this many years and that many angles in the business. Our listeners and our viewers, they're over the HGTV stuff, which we know is formulaic, fake, and made up. They're into the real life stories. So you're having cocktails with somebody because you can't, go to a hockey game right now. You can have cocktails over Zoom. What do you tell them about your life in real estate? What's the crazy things you've encountered that surprised you, shocked you, heartened you, disheartened you? What do you have to tell us, Rock?
Well, I think that you go through, the ebbs and tides. Climbing Mount Everest is not, it's not steep all the time. It's not flat all the time. There's different levels. So
have you climbed Mount Everest?
I have not. Okay. I've done Machu Picchu, but I haven't done Everest. But as a metaphor,
I was getting really excited there. I wanted to hear about your story. I guess you have to tell us that when you go get it done.
Mm-hmm. So I would say as a metaphor, number one is, you know, don't wait to buy real estate. You buy real estate and you wait. Now, maybe the exception as we're going through this pandemic, I would wait at least a few months to see how things shake out. But real estate's a beautiful, quiet, plugger that just happens in the background. We need to live somewhere and people need to live somewhere. So it's a great thing. And you know that and your listeners know that. Here's what happened to me, though, is that I got really good at it for a while and then I got cocky. And I started to, you know, invest in second mortgages and things like that. The moment that I didn't follow my system and plan, I got burnt. I loaned this one lady $200,000 as a second mortgage where she was supposed to pay me something like 30% over 3 months. And it was too good to be true. And it ended up being too good to be true. And then I had to repossess the property. And I found out that she had 26 dogs in the property. And literally, there was poop all over the place. She had an indoor pool that she didn't take care of. So there was all this humidity in the house. So it was mold from the inside out. Long story short, as emotion goes up, intelligence goes down. I got angry. I threw more money at it. I ended up losing $400,000 and took this property on. And me and my family cleaned the poop ourselves to try to rectify it. So the moral of the story is you know, you really should respect your rules and respect your principles. And there's going to be times when you're the fastest one and you think you figured everything out. And you want to break your rules, you want to shortcut it, but it doesn't work. You might work once or twice if you're lucky, but there's a reason that you should have a system that you follow. And real estate, you know, you need to have defined what that is. And then when you do, you'll really do well. And if you don't, you're going to get slapped around like I did.
So going back to that scenario, obviously not everything comes out perfectly, but in retrospect, when that person came to you, what questions should you have asked her that would have kept you from breaking your own rules? Because as we know, generally it's the process that saves you and it's the questions that save you. And so if somebody's listening to this podcast or watching it and they're thinking, man, I got somebody that's asking me for money, what would you have done differently besides say no?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is due diligence. I didn't do the due diligence. I relied on a third party that had given me a lot of good leads and they said they did the due diligence for me and I didn't do it. Nobody cares about your money as much as you do. So yeah. They were making a fee off of it. They were sloppy and I ended up with, you know, the mess. So I did a view on paper. I should have done a drive by. I should have maybe met the person. I should have done a tour of the property. I didn't do any of that. I just wrote a check for $200,000, went to the notary and signed it and waited salivating there for my 30%. I was greedy and I deserved to be slapped around for that. And it was really not complicated.
When you come out the other side of that, what did you do with that property? Did you keep it to try and make your money back long term, or did you go ahead and sell it and just be done with it?
Yeah. So it was actually three properties. It was two homes and a piece of land on a lake. And I took it over. I poured some money into it, fixed it up, and sold all three parcels separately. I made some money on the land. I lost on the other two properties. I put a renter in there and then the renter took advantage of me and held me hostage because he's like, oh no, I'm not going to leave now unless you pay me 10 grand. Or before it was going to be month to month and it was on a handshake. So it was just one bad mistake after the other. And I took them over, which I shouldn't have done also. And I took them over without even going into the property. I'm like, I'll take this over. I'll make it right. And I'm going to win. It went wrong. And the same thing kind of happened when I sold my business for $4 million. I sold it to an agent in my office and she took it. And then she bought herself a bunch of new cars and she flew first class all over the country. I had a balance of sale and she wasn't making the money. She wasn't doing the right things. And so I had to repossess it. So I think you're going to make mistakes. I made mistakes. I've overdone, all done very well. But at the same time, you've got to be able to be resilient to learn from those. Otherwise, you know, you're going to end up wanting to just work at Starbucks the rest of your life.
I don't ever want to work at Starbucks. I'll be honest with you. That's never in my business plan. So I love what you said about with real estate investments, you don't wait to buy, you buy and wait. So what was the first thing you bought after this scenario where you had to de-poop a house, you had a tenant hold you hostage? For some people, that would have been enough to say, screw it. I'm never touching this stuff again. I'm never buying real estate's poison because, you know, people take one bad scenario and act like it's going to be the standard. Obviously, you didn't stop investing because you're more successful today than you were then. So what was the next thing you bought, and how did you get over that emotional and mental hurdle of, I can't go through this again, so I'm going to take the plunge?
You know, when you grow up on a farm, the horses need to be fed on Christmas Day, on Thanksgiving. They don't care what the day is, Wednesday or Saturday. They don't care. They need to be fed. And so you learn to become very creative and resourceful. And one of the things that I've learned in life is that when you don't win or get the result that you want, you can learn. So when I lost or whatever, I had a $400,000 education. And I was going to now, you know, get a rate of return on that. So it wasn't like I'm not going to go back into real estate. It's like now with that wisdom, equipped with that wisdom, how am I going to become more successful and double back on my money? So the next one was the student housing that I got involved in. And it's been really, really great business. So I think in life, nothing has meaning but the meaning we give it. Viktor Frankl was very, very instrumental in saying there's stimulus response or stimulus pause response. And in that pause, you have a chance to go, how do I want to respond to this? How do I want to show up? What do I want to get from this? And you ask really good questions. So to me is, how am I going to learn from this, turn it around and cash in on the mistake that I made? So I've bought commercial, I've bought multifamily, I've bought flips, condos. It didn't stop me. It just made me come at it with more vigor.
It's so funny. I feel like every young person who's out there bitching about college debt should be listening to this episode, because you've got so many people in this current generation that have created their own debt scenarios because of the choices they've made. Let's be honest about it. Mm-hmm. And then they just want somebody else to solve it for them instead of saying, I've got $100,000 in debt. You looked at it as, I've made a $400,000 mistake, or you could say it's an investment in your own education. And oh my gosh, how much further could these young people get if they'd say, I got to get something out of this debt instead of somebody else make it go away? It's just a different outcome, different way to look at it.
It's a different mindset. And I think that I don't want to say it's not their fault, but we are a society that doesn't really value responsibility.
Amen.
And at the end of the day, you know, I'm responsible for everything I did there. Now, I did play the blame game. The person who gave me the referral, I was mad. I was pissed off. I was saying, you screwed me. You didn't do your due diligence. You should be giving some of my money back. I was a little baby. But after I got over that, I owned it. I took responsibility for it. And I went out and I got, you know, my return on my investment. And I think that when it's going great, we want to take responsibility. Yeah, I scored the goal. You know, I'm the man, et cetera. But when it's not going great, that's a time when you need to take responsibility also. And that's what's lacking today. People rack up student debt and then they want to be forgiven it. The education they got isn't useful in the world today, so they blame the system. Ultimately, if you really want an epic life.
I told my kids, Mike, if you get a degree that ends in the word studies, I ain't giving you any money for that. You want a degree, it better end in an ology or something like that. Then we're talking history, then we can work something out. But
that's fine.
So you think about the mindset that you've had. You own your mistakes, you've paid for your mistakes, but you've ultimately come out better because of those. Do you think you would have moved into these interesting avenues of investing if you hadn't made that giant mistake?
You know, I'm a, what you might call a serial entrepreneur. I attack life. So I've made so many mistakes. We could talk for the next 2 hours on, you know, I've been married a couple of times and divorced, and I've been in times a great father and a terrible father. I make terrible decisions on the golf course sometimes, and I make some great ones. But here's the thing. People say to me, oh, Rock, you're such a successful entrepreneur. You make such great decisions. I go, actually, no, most of the decisions I make are wrong. But then I make the next one that's closer to being right. And then I make the next one. And like Winston Churchill said, is that the ability to remain enthusiastic in spite of your setbacks is what define successful people. So I don't get very discouraged. I get excited. When I mess up, I'm like, oh, I've got another education coming up. Yeah. Right. And then I just correct and correct. So I'm not afraid to make decisions. I'm not afraid to fail. I'm afraid to not be in the game, right? Get me in the arena. Put me on, coach, right? Okay, I messed up. They scored against us. Give me another chance. I want to learn.
So what are you going to do next? So obviously, when we're recording this, we're in the middle of the coronavirus and everybody's staying away from each other, social distancing, stay at home, figure it out. So what are you doing day to day right now to feed that need to be in the game and be doing things when we're all a little bit out of our normal routine or out of sorts?
Yeah, again, get very excited. So I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and it's the first year I'm here. So I picked 5,000 oranges so far. Some off the trees in my backyard, and then I've gone to my neighbors who are too lazy to pick theirs, and I said, can I pick your oranges? And they're like, yeah, sure. I bought an industrial machine, and I have enough frozen orange juice for the next 3 months. So that's one thing that I chose to do. Yeah, absolutely.
They're not using their oranges?
There's so many. I live in an area that used to be an orchard. There's so many, and they're complacent because they're so used to it. But I come from Canada. It's my first year. I'm like, you can pick citrus off of them.
I'm like, what? I know. That's why I'm like, we don't have this in North Carolina. That sounds amazing.
It's really awesome. It's really great. So I have freshly squeezed orange juice every day. So that's one thing. I've taken up piano lessons. I'm going to, you know, I have some time at home. I'm doing that. And fortunately here, we can still golf. So I golf every other day. And all of the baseball players and football players that have nothing to do are on the golf courses. So I've started to meet a bunch of really cool professionals. And because I'm a life coach, I've been able to coach some of them in their game. And now they're inviting me to events. They're inviting me to the games. And so I'm probably going to take advantage and leverage that relationship. So to me, going through this, you get to decide, do you want to survive or do you want to thrive?
Exactly.
When the going gets tough, the tough get going. So this is a time to double down on your rituals. I do yoga at home. I do 100 push-ups a day. I do my meditation. I'm busier now and more pumped up about the opportunities now than the regular time, because most people, when things get tough, they panic, they freeze, they hesitate. I'm buying stocks in the stock market.
They don't take a shower. They're wearing yoga pants.
Right. So this is a very exciting time for me. I've cherry picking some stocks that have been beaten up, and I'm enjoying getting 20% returns a day. This is exciting times.
All right. So Rock, if anybody wants to find out more about the I Am movement, they want to find out what your offerings are, where can they find you in the great wide world? Although they probably won't be in Phoenix, they can probably find you through the interwebs. What's the best place?
So they can go to the I Am Movement podcast, which is on iTunes and Stitcher and all that kind of stuff. And they can go to my website, rockthomas.com. And of course, on social media, I have some postings on Instagram and Facebook and my YouTube channel. So they can find me on all those handles. Happy to contribute a conversation and maybe a new perspective that can move people in a new direction.
All right. So I have to ask you one more question. So what's your real name? There's no way your mother named you Rock.
So I'm Dutch. My real name is a little hard to pronounce for some people. Some people get it. It's A-R-V-I-N. Let's see how you would pronounce that.
A-R-V-I-N?
Correct.
Well, I'm Southern, so I'd say Arvin, but that's obviously not right. So it must be like...
No, you got it. You got it. You got Arvin? It. Yes. When I was in sales, and French people would call it Harvin or Alvin or Irving. Hey there, the guy, what's your name again? So somebody gave me the nickname Rock at an event and it stuck. So I stayed with it.
Okay. Well, you know, I had to ask, you know.
You had to ask because you're curious.
I'm curious. And that's how we roll. So thank you for coming on the podcast and for sharing some of your backstory, mostly for telling us that making mistakes is okay, especially when they come from arrogance, they can lead to a place of humility and growth. And so, guys, I know y'all didn't write anything down, but it's okay because all of the links to Rock's information will be in the show notes for this episode. Go check out his podcast. If you like it, give it 5 stars and a review because all of us podcasters appreciate that. And if you like mine, you should give me 5 stars and a review too. And always surround yourself with people that are learning and growing because that's part of the crazy shit in real estate. Every day is different. And when every day is different, you never know what the opportunity is going to be. So I'm personally going to go check out some student housing because it never crossed my mind before. And it's the time to go look and learn.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show, guys. We'll see you next time.
Ciao.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.